Okay, so talking about Bucky the Bronco, who just came back from getting a bunch of modifications done to him, here's the cool thing. These spotlights in the back. You know, if somebody comes up behind you and is messing with you, you flip the spotlights on, and what's it do? It blinds them. I kind of envision this as kind of like a, you know, just a weapon. You're going down the road, somebody does this, and you throw that on, and they wreck. Kind of seeing if I'm wondering if I can make that happen.
Does it have a train horn?
Do what?
Does it have a train horn?
Bucky doesn't have a train horn.
No.
Big Blue has a train horn. Yeah. Bucky does not have a train horn because there literally was no place to put the air compressor without pulling something out and being, there was no place to put the air compressor.
Yeah,
you know, that's fair. It's just not good. Hey, we got Craig Nelson here with Indiana Crop with us on Stock Talk. So, man, welcome, Craig. This is our pre Stock Talk where we just BS talk.
Perfect.
Just stock BS talk.
BS talk, awesome. Stock,
whatever. That's it.
Well, I'm happy to join Todd and Kat in this illustrious Stock Talk here.
There we go.
We'll give it a chance.
Hey, let's play the intro. We'll get started on this rascal on this Friday morning. Where are you? Oh, welcome to Stock Talk, officially. Yes. Catherine, where are you?
I am in oil country right now.
Are you interviewing? Are you auditioning for a part in Landman?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing.
You're auditioning for Landman.
Trying Which to take Allie Larder's part.
Do what?
Trying to take Allie Larder's part.
No. Nobody can take Allie Larder. You're way too young. No,
she's
so
good in it.
she's pretty good. Did you see the first episode on this? Craig, you watched the show?
Unfortunately, no. I've heard about it.
But come on, man. You're gonna have to join the cool kids and watch Landman because it's outrageously funny. And you know, Billy Bob Thornton touches everything, and I mean even though he's truly weird in real life, he is an Arkansan, so we like him for that. But he's truly weird in real life, but his characters are just spot on.
Anyway, yeah, they're really good.
He has this crazy freaking wife, ex-wife, and I guess they're now getting back together. And she's just insane. So you saw the first episode.
Yeah.
And the whole thing where she got mad at him and threw the plate all over the place and the food and everything.
I'm in Landman country.
Okay. Catherine is in Landman country, right in the middle of all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, there you go. Okay. Craig, we're glad you're here with us on Stock Talk. We wanted to, you know, we just got back last week from the Corn Belt Seed and Grain Conference, newly branded, to also talk about grain. And it's a little bit different this year than it has been in past years. And, man, wanted to talk about it. Give us what you think your retro was. What did you think about it?
Yeah, awesome. Really enjoyed the conference this year. The committee, the Corn Belt Seed and Grain Conference committee that we put together, did an excellent job of finding, I think, really informative speakers for the conference. The official title of it this year, the theme was AI in Agriculture, Leadership, Innovation, and Growth. And I think, you know, we were able to really find speakers that could latch onto that subject and bring it into a sense that was practical and provided some applicable content that many of us can take back to our own workplaces and integrate. Some of the basic components of it, of, you know, what's the low hanging fruit? Can you use it for communication, improving communication, and methods that we can collect information when we have meetings and this type of thing, to, you know, more decision-making type models and some other components. So, you know, we've used it, you know, really only a surface effect here at Indiana Crop Improvement Association, but it really got us thinking about, you know, are there aspects of AI that we can import integrate into our association to help us be more efficient and provide, you know, greater services to our members. So we're kind of excited about it.
You know, it's a very, very timely topic. And that is actually one of the things that we're trying to push at IPSA this year is getting into, you know, real use of AI today. You know, I was interested listening to a lot of speakers and, you know, they, for the conference. And of course you had a lot of people that are using, cool equipment using visual AI. I was struck by Jim Schwagert and his discussion about what they're doing as far as seed sorting and some of the new AI pieces that they're doing. But I think the important aspect for me is, yes, AI is coming and it's going to enable, you know, some automation pieces that are going to be just incredible and time saving and really help us to do some stuff that is going to be really needed, particularly in the seed industry. But for every day, we can do things right now to drive efficiencies in our operation. And I know, you know, my good friend Kevin Van Trump said, you know, you can efficient somebody to death and, you know, efficient them out of business because everybody wants to sell you efficiency. This is not a sales pitch. This is literally doing more because you have AI helping you do the stuff. And that's one of the key focuses we've been doing. Catherine has been working on this and, you know, has developed an AI primer. So I know you have a lot to add here, Catherine.
Well, you know, on our website, which, you know, I'm sure everybody knows by now, but it's available on our website. We have a AI playbook. And so I feel like it's our responsibility as an association to kind of like help our members understand how to use it. And just in a simple way, even because, I mean, we've said before, we don't think that, you know, you're going to be outrun by those who are utilizing AI because they are more efficient. You know, they become more powerful in a way because they can do these things much faster. So we've got an AI playbook 101. I have like a 1.5 and a 201 that are going to come out as well before the conference. And then we're going to talk about it a little bit at the conference. And then y'all talked about it too. So it's kind of all that co-marketing that we were trying to all kind of putting together. But yeah. I think it's really, really important that everyone knows how to use it. Not necessarily, let's say they're super against it and they don't want to use it. That's fine. But you need to have enough knowledge about it to know what it can do and what it cannot do. Just that way you remain relevant.
Yeah. One of the aspects that, you know, a couple different of the speakers brought up, and I think it's important is, you know, there's somewhat of a fear factor, you know, mm-hmm. what is this? Because there's so much unknown, you know, related to it. And the fact that, you know, what's human inspired and what is machine inspired and these kind of issues and so forth. But one of the things that multiple speakers brought up is, you know, use it as a tool. It doesn't have to run your entire operation or anything like that, but you pick and choose those aspects that it can really support and help you. And I think, you know, that was the take home message that I took from most of the presentations is, you know, let's figure out how, you know, it can't do everything. And I think that that's kind of a misnomer, but there are certain things that it can do really, really well. And so if we pick those items and incorporate those, I think it'll help us.
Yeah, I thought it could do everything. What are you saying it can't do?
Well, we'll have to leave it to the experts to say what it, maybe it can do more than I can. Maybe I didn't get the full effect of it. No, I think that the whole tool concept is really a good one.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think if we think of it as that tool that you were just talking about, Craig, I think that's where it's very important. Where, while yes, there's automations that can replace people, I think AI that we're talking about, you know, in a general sense, ChatGPT, Grok, you know, that kind of stuff, I don't think it's going to replace people. And this may be an unpopular opinion. I don't think it's going to replace people, but those who are using it will replace those who aren't.
Yeah,
that's the important thing. I mean, I think one of the messages we're trying to get around to everybody is, look, if you, it's a great tool. And I think I've said this a couple of times, and I'm not unique in saying this. It's a great tool and you're either going to embrace it or be left behind. And I mean, I think that's the real thing. And I see more and more challenges. I mean, look, we've seen, you know, notably in the news over the last 3 months, there have been a couple of tech companies that basically have just fired all their engineers that were not embracing AI. Fired all their freaking engineers. And, you know, you think, well, what the heck? Why are they doing that? It's an efficiency play because honestly, they know that they can accomplish more with that. And that seems to be a little bit dramatic, but, you know, it's not so much that, and I think this is really true. It's not that there's going to be an AI automaton that is going to come in and replace somebody's job. Yeah. It's jobs will be absorbed because people will be more efficient with AI. And there will need to be less people, or if you're short staffed or, you know, you're trying to maintain your cost basis and you need to do more, all of a sudden you'll find that your people can do 20% more as they embrace AI. I know that Catherine has been the catalyst for me. I think I've said this a few times. She embraced AI early and saw all this. I always thought I was an early adopter of technology. I'm finding in my older age that I am less enthused about playing around with technology, but you know, the simplistic way that she got me started on using ChatGPT was replacing Google search. And that seems like not much, but it's been a huge piece. And so now it has become my research engine. You know, it has become the thing that I drop in if I'm trying to write something and I'm just really procrastinating because I've got writer's block. I just ask and it starts me out on a path and all of a sudden I can just make things flow. I mean, that's the little things. And then, you know, starting to mess around with some of these, as you mentioned, Craig, AI agents for email. Now I'm a little bit concerned about that for a few different reasons, but you know, how can you become more efficient on looking at, you know, emails and stuff of that nature and being able to respond? And, you know, how do we handle, you know, phone calls and things of that nature? Is there a better way to do that? I think for me, the only thing that has happened so far is I'm having email sorted for me by AI, which means that, you know, they're going in and looking and categorizing them so I can go into big groups and look at them and say, all of this is junk, but this one's important and pull that one out and, you know, delete 25 emails at one time that I don't need. And instead of having to go through my entire email box and looking at everything, the categorization, no kidding, it probably saves me 20 minutes on being able to run through and do stuff like that. So I don't know. It's the efficiency is impressive as to what we can do. So one thing though, and let's talk a minute about where it is good and where it is not. So when we look at communications on some of this stuff, I know in my inbox, I don't have between 50 and 100 AI emails, and they're obviously AI generated emails a day. I think something's wrong with my inbox. Because I mean, they just pour in and they're, you know, they all have similar type titles. So, you know, it's easy to see that, okay, this is just AI generated. It's not even a real person. I'm not interested. And I mean, I'm pretty harsh on that. I'm not interested. Boom, you're gone. But I've also found that as I start actually writing an email to someone and look at it, I'm concerned that it sounds a little bit AI-ish, or maybe AI sounds a little bit like me, however it is. So I'm beginning to get concerned that in all the plethora of spam and crap that we get from AI, that, you know, good stuff's going to get lost in the noise too. So there are some inherent dangers there.
And unfortunately, you know, when new technology, you know, that's designed for purposes that, you know, help us to be more efficient and be more effective and all the things that we want, you know, as a society in general. But, you know, always there's that component, and hopefully it's a very small component, that utilizes these technologies for nefarious type purposes and so forth. And so that's what's hard to deal with, is that, you know, like you say, how can this help us to, you know, like, for example, at Indiana Crop Improvement, how can we use it to, you know, share our message, which I think is a good message, and those kind of things. and yet not become just a filtered piece of information that, you know, doesn't have much value to anybody, and that, you know, it'll just be discarded and these kind of things. So it's still hard, you know, and technology can help to some degree. But I guess I go back to, and I share this with people, is that, you know, my belief is that, you know, the seed industry is a very relational industry. And so we still have to be present. We still have to have, you know, in-depth conversations with one another, you know, similar to what we're doing today. I mean, we're using technology here, but, you know, quite frankly, it feels like we're, you know, sitting down together at a conference table and just having a nice conference here. And so here's where, a component of technology is very helpful, you know, in that we get some of those visual cues and obviously, you know, audio, you know, we can communicate in a really positive way. But, you know, it's hard to beat when you can actually be face to face and chatting with one another, you know, across an actual table too.
Well, we've certainly gotten a lot more, a lot more efficient in a lot of different ways on that aspect. And I mean, you know, these Zoom calls and video calls have all made that a lot more efficient. But so if this is the actual next step for us, it's probably great. And this is where, you know, people, you know, embrace the technology or get left behind. And it is, I think, difficult for some people to say, okay, well, I'm not really sure how to start. How can I see this? That's why we've got to have a practical use base on all of that. So what else what were some things that you were really excited about from the Corn Belt conference? Craig, what did you feel? I mean, I think the attendance was solid. You changed venues this year. Versus where it's been for, gosh, I'm going to say probably at least the last 10 years. Marriott North in Indianapolis.
Yep. So we switched, as Todd mentioned, to the Taliesin in Carmel, Indiana, which is just a northern suburb of Indianapolis. The venue is a little bit smaller, a little tighter than what, you know, the Marriott North, like we've been in previously. But there's good aspects and bad aspects. And right now we're polling, you know, the participants, the sponsors, and the exhibitors. You know, what did you like about the venue? What didn't you like? And I was talking with Susan yesterday, and she was sharing some information related to that survey. And, you know, while there's certain, you know, aspects that weren't as positive, we had, you know, more confined space, you know, for some folks and specifically for some exhibitors and this kind of thing. But it also created a situation where we had more of those connections, you know, what we were just talking about, those, you know, one-on-one kind of connections. And so by bringing into a little bit, you know, more confined space, I think it actually helped drive, you know, some good networking that a lot of folks had. And we did get, you know, very positive responses back, you know, related to the switch. And so we feel pretty good about it. We haven't made, you know, I've shared a little bit with the board, and my board, we're going to meet again and talk about, you know, exactly what our decision is. But I think, you know, at least when Susan and I have been talking about it, we're kind of leaning towards probably going back to the Taliesin again next year. We had a good experience there.
I got to tell you, yeah, it was a little bit tighter, but it felt contained. And honestly, I would use the word cozy and comfortable. I mean, it did feel cozy and comfortable, and people were all there together and stayed engaged. They didn't have, you know, a lot of places they were wandering off to. So, you know, it really did feel pretty good from that standpoint for me. So, I would say it was a positive change overall. And let's face it, we know firsthand, you know, when you start looking at, you know, the downloads and what everybody thinks on those surveys, there's always going to be some great comments make you feel good. There's always going to be some comments that you think, what the heck? You know, so it comes with the good and the bad, but you know, you got to ask those questions so you can really look into it and learn and understand what people were happy with and what people were unhappy with. And that, you know, always makes us better. It's tough, but it makes us better.
And I appreciate that. And you know, what I always say is, you know, I'm one person. I have one perspective, but you know, there's 150, 170 odd people that have different perspectives. And so it's important for me to look at not only my perspective, but other people's perspective and, you know, what did they feel and what experience did they have? Because, you know, obviously we want to try to make the experience good for everyone, but, you know, which is pretty tall order. Like you say, you know, everybody's got a little bit different of what they really value, but you take the aggregate, the total, and then hopefully you can meet the vast majority of them and what they're looking for. So what we really focus on is providing, you know, really high quality speakers that make our, you know, make the attendees think about things in a different way or spark interest that might help drive their business forward. And then also, you know, those networking opportunities, which I think are super critical. And I know that with IPSA, you guys feel the same way. Is how can we get people together so they can interact with one another, and whether it's a business relationship or a social relationship, but at the end of the day, it's those relationships that really matter, because that's what drives organizations and businesses forward.
No question. We 100% agree with you on both of those points. Hey, Craig, so what's going on now with Indiana Crop? You've been in that role now, what, 18 months?
Yeah. Well, 2 years of coming up on 2 years here as the CEO of ICIA.
Which we were thrilled to have you come in. I know that was a big change, but thrilled to have you come back in or come in. And so how's it going? What are you seeing? How's business? What are you seeing coming up next?
Yeah, we're really excited. I personally am very excited about what's happening at ICIA, or I should say Indiana Crop Improvement Association. There's a few other crop improvements that start with I, so we always try to make sure that I'm representing Indiana in this one. But a lot of positive things are happening here at our association. We really try to focus on aspects that are important to us. Obviously, you know, seed certification is a mandate, you know, specifically for the state of Indiana that we're highly focused on, and how can we serve our members, their specific needs related to, you know, seed certification. And that encompasses everything from field inspections, which is, you know, kind of the bread and butter of what we do, but also, you know, our laboratory testing capabilities, be it our seed testing laboratory or genetics testing laboratory. One of the things that was really appealing about, you know, what's happened here at ICIA is, you know, many, many years ago, they made the decision that they were going to go forward into this genetic testing space. And a lot of folks, you know, didn't make that decision. And I think it's proved to be a really positive aspect of what we can do in terms of the services that we provide for our members, both within the state of Indiana and outside of the, you know, throughout the United States and even internationally. We have association members scattered all over, but having the capability to provide some of those more in-depth testing capabilities really, I think, you know, puts us in a strong position to really support, you know, what our members need in terms of, you know, the kind of quality that they're looking for, the ability to turn around data in a timely fashion so folks can make important decisions about the quality of their seed product. You know, that's
so critical. When we're talking about this genetic testing, we're talking about germ testing and what all else? And I mean, we've got, you know, tons of IPSA members I know that are members of Indiana Crop Improvement Association as well. Y'all do a lot of testing that reaches way beyond Indiana as well. But I mean, so when we're talking about that, what else is in the portfolio for Indiana Crop on genetic testing?
Okay. So we kind of divide it into three sections. One is what I call adventitious presence testing. LLP is also low-level presence testing, or, you know, more commonly called non-GMO testing. You know, that is a core component. A lot of the crops that we test, corn, soybeans, you know, are, you know, genetically transformed. And so the ability to determine, you know, in a conventional lot or in an organic lot, you know, is there any contaminants with a GMO? You know, mm-hmm. we've got full capability to do that level of testing. Then the converse of that is genetically transformed material. And those producers that are working with GMOs basically or transgenes, you know, can we detect that the presence of that? Is it, you know, whether it be
Of the specified transgene? In other
words,
you can, for instance, detect BT11. You can detect MON89034, the specific events in. So you can do yep. that level two.
Insect resistance traits or yeah. herbicide tolerance traits. We got full capability to do that, both herbicide bioassay as well as ELISA tests, which confirm the presence of that trait that should be there. And we're trait provider validated on all of our assays.
So and that's, then the, I mean, that is a big deal that, as you said, not everybody has embraced, and that takes not only the certification, takes a bit of training and expertise as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been fortunate. We've invested in high quality staff members that are fully capable. We got a couple of PhDs on our staff. People that have been in the industry, that have been in trait providers, and really understand the ins and outs of the development of those assays, and then being able to incorporate them here. And the final component of what we were capable of doing is genetic purity testing. And so there's a couple different ways that this has been done. But what we've clarify that to my way of thinking, genetic purity is the purity of that hybrid. So if we're talking about right. seed corn, we're talking about inbred purity. Is it, no blow-in pollen from foreign pollen that might have contaminated? Specifically, you know, what most producers are really worried about are those tall off types. And so ensuring that those aren't present in the material that we're testing. Or the other issue that's highly important is selfing. So, you know, when that hybrid cross is made, to ensure that there's either no selfing present or very low levels of selfing present in that corn product. So we made the decision last year to go ahead and incorporate DNA-based SNP testing for our genetic purity. And so I think that's the direction that most of the large providers are going. We felt like it was important to move in that direction. I know that isozymes are still pretty common in the seed industry. And growing up through that technology over the years, I'm really comfortable with it. But we just felt like we needed to make this directional change for Indiana crop improvement. And it's been good. We've got it up and running. We've got it at a capacity where we can turn around samples in a really reasonable period of time. So I'm really excited about what's going on.
Yeah, so to me, it's a really important aspect of what's going on out there. So really and truly, from start to finish, y'all can go in with the genetics, look at the biotechnology traits, really give a full assessment all the way through on seed from a purity standpoint, including the genetic purity. That's, yeah, and that is not something that obviously everybody can do. In any way, shape, or form. So, you know, I would suppose y'all are seeing a big pull up on business in different areas where y'all can deliver that service and other folks can't.
Yeah, we feel like, you know, that there are definitely competitors in this space and you know, they have quality products as well. But, you know, we feel like, you know, what our members need, you know, is those level of capabilities. And that's why when we look at, you know, what's new and what's coming out, you know, we really try to determine, it's having those in-depth conversations with our customers, I guess, and understanding what their needs are, and then incorporating assays or tests that can support that. The thing that we don't want to do is, hey, let's develop an assay. We're really excited about it because, you know, we're kind of seed geeks associated with this, but it's not about developing an assay. It's developing a capability that supports that end user, that end client. And that's what our focus is really all about.
Well, there's one for us, Catherine, Seed Geeks, a new term where, you know, maybe that we need some t-shirts.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We need to talk to our buddy Jordan Van Trump at Ag Swag. Say, hey, Jordan, we need a Seed Geek shirt and go from there. I like that.
I like it.
Well, Craig, man, very much appreciate you dropping on with us this morning. We just wanted to have a conversation. Congratulations to you and your team. And we would be remiss if we didn't give a shout out to Susan Orndorff for the work that she does around Corn Belt and supporting everything that y'all do there, because I thought she did a very good job. I have to give these kudos to Susan, because I mean to tell you, she was taking out the trash. She was moving people around. She was telling people this and that to make sure everything was good. And she told me at one time, she said, "I'm not ashamed to take out the trash. I used to be a waitress. I know how to do a lot of stuff." So good for Susan. Congratulations to you both.
We were certainly very happy. She's got a big job. She's got to keep me in alignment there too. And so, I don't know how successful she is at that, but she's been great, and she's definitely a driving force of what happens at our conference, and highly effective at her job there.
Well, sure. I actually had a few people come up to me after I talked for a few minutes and mentioned that we were offering, you know, the discount of 2-for-1, saying, "I didn't know about that 2-for-1. I'm registered at Ipsen. Can I get my discount?" So I guess we have to do a better job of getting that news out next year that we'll, you know, as we continue to do that and work together. And man, we're just happy to be able to work with you, Craig, and your team at ICIA around.
Well, Todd and Catherine, we really appreciate the support, you know, that you guys have had, you know, working with us to, you know, ensure the success of our conference. And we definitely want to help promote, you know, IPSA. You know, you guys have been, you know, really important to the seed industry. We understand the value that you bring, and we want to support you and what you're trying to accomplish as well. So we're happy to be sponsors, and we're going to be there, and it's in January, right?
January 12th, Indianapolis is not going to be far from you.
We'll make it down for sure.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And over to you, Catherine.
Don't forget to, sorry, Rudy shook his head and I could hear his collar. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe our podcast so that way we can, you know, entertain other people.
There we go. We can always be entertaining.
Yes.
See you next time.
Thank you.